I am an addictive personality, and so I fear things to which I could become addicted, like gambling or prescription drugs. But I want to sleep better, and I want to ache less. Try, as I do, thetrustedlab.com, delivered to your home. Texas-based, completely legal CBD that has given me great results. TheTrustedLab.com. Allied Outdoor Solutions has been a show sponsor of ours in our Houston flagship market for almost 20 years now. And it's been fun because they've gone from just a handful of folks to growing and growing and growing, doing beautiful backyard solutions to make your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, your front driveway look like a resort. And over the years, they've added Austin, San Antonio, Dallas. And what the work they do, you can see it for yourself at AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com or have them come do it for you. 844-846-1010. 844-846-1010.
It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
It was a moonlit night in old Mexico. I walked alone between some old adobe haciendas. Suddenly, I heard the plaintive cry of a young Mexican girl.
You better come home, Speedy Gonzales, away from Tannery Road. Stop all of your drinking with that pussy named Flo. Come on home to your adobe and slap some mud on the wall. The roof is leaking like a strainer. There's loads of roaches in the hall. Speedy Gonzales.
I have to go shopping downtown for my mother. She needs some tortillas and chili pepper.
Your dog is gonna have a puppy, and we're running out of coal. No enchiladas in the icebox, and the television's broke. On your sweatshirt, I smell some perfume in your ear. Well, if you're gonna keep on messing, don't bring your business back here. Speedy Gonzales, why don't you come home? Speedy Gonzales, how come you leave me all alone?
Hey, Rosita, come quick. Down in the cantina, they're giving green stamps with tequila.
Probably, if you're a long-time listener to our show, and you're accustomed to the fact that if we play out a song like that, there's a reason for it, and I'm going to give you the reason. And it's usually because on this day in history, the singer, the songwriter, the song, the movie, or something hit number one, or was born, or died. We just played that song for you. It was 60 years ago, not to the day, that Pat Boone recorded that song. And what a different time. You could have some fun, right? And then you might say, well, that's offensive, making fun of Mexicans. Au contraire, mon frere. It's not making fun of Mexicans. It's paying tribute to a Mexican mouse. And do I need to remind you, the fastest mouse in all of Mexico. That's correct. That song was written a year earlier by David Dante, also known as David Hess. And it was recorded, and it briefly made it into the charts. But a year later, Pat Boone, who it's really hard to explain to somebody today how big Pat Boone was. Now, I wasn't alive, but I go back and study these things. But that song has a great history. And if you'll bear with me, I'd like to tell it to you now. So Speedy Gonzales, the cartoon, was very popular at the time. So Pat Boone takes that song, figures, hey, that's a cultural reference everyone will get. Pretty easy. The song was already written. He added the spoken part at the beginning, which, by the way, isn't it kind of cool, like a chord change, but a whole mood change? Bear with me for a moment. Let's start the song again. Pat Boone added this to the original song. It starts like it's going to be Marty Robbins' El Paso, like some sort of a deep, well-told story of love in the hot Mexican night. And then it goes Speedy Gonzales. Just listen to the tone he starts with.
It was a moonlit night in old Mexico. I walked alone between some old adobe haciendas. Suddenly, I heard the plaintive cry of a young Mexican girl.
Let me stop you there. That la 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 la, rewind that for a moment. That's being sung by Robin Ward, also known as Jackie Ward. She used two different stage names. I want you to listen to this again, and I want you to think to yourself, have I ever heard that sound before? Listen again.
La la la. La 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 la.
Wait right there. You have heard that, and here's where you've heard it. And the man singing it said that's exactly where he came up with it. That is where Elton John said he got the la 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 line in Crocodile Rock. It was from Robin Ward. Bear with me a minute more. Robin Ward was one of the singers who was singing, because on the Partridge Family, you may not know this, but much like Milli Vanilli, they weren't actually singing other than David Cassidy. But the reason I tell this is some of you will remember Robin Ward, also known as Jackie Ward. She was on all. She was on the Carol Burnett Show, Red Skelton, Danny Kaye, Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour. But you actually know she was in television theme songs: Flipper, Batman, Love, American Style, Maude with Donny Hathaway on lead vocals. I mentioned to you the Partridge Family and all sorts of other songs. But you most know the voice of Robin Ward / Jackie Ward, the two names she performed under a commercial that you probably haven't heard in over 20 years, but it's one of the most memorable commercials, certainly of my childhood and probably of yours. Ramon's going to play it, and you sing along.
Started out where cable cars play this song.
Not right at home before very long.
Right alone the San Francisco creek.
From San Francisco, famous for food, comes Rice-A-Roni, the exciting new side dish. Here at last is a welcome change, a change from potatoes. Now you can serve Rice-A-Roni, a delicious side dish with meat, chicken, or fish. And you make Rice-A-Roni in minutes. Everything's right in the box. A packet of soup base, rice, and vermicelli that you brown in butter. Add the special herb-flavored broth, and in minutes, Rice-A-Roni. Fluffy, fragrant. A wonderful change from potatoes.
Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
From Lebesians to librarians. Everyone listens. The Michael Berry Show.
The year was 1973. I was only three, but some of you might have been about 17, 18, 19, 20, college age, high school age, going off to Vietnam age. Maybe you were in Nam on this day in 73. God bless you. And this song, well, this album, not this song, it's number one on the Billboard Albums chart. The reason I know it wasn't this song, which is Brain Dead. Brain Damage. Did I say Brain Dead? Brain Damage. I meant Brain Damage. Brain Damage was not released as a single. In fact, it was an album, concept album. It was only, I think, was Money the only thing released as a single? You sure? Yeah. Money was the only song released as a single. Play that in case somebody knows it but doesn't realize they know it. But 73, what a time. I mean, I was just a little child, so I can't. But for folks that are about, 68-ish, that was a time. Well, there was a lot going on, and it's, your young mind was processing a lot. The only song released as a single off The Dark Side of the Moon. You'll notice, Ramon, it's in 5-4 time. Money, the getaway, you get a good job with your pay and you're okay. All right, we have a lot to talk about, but I do want to note this about this album. It was on this day in 73 that it hit number one on the Billboard Albums chart. Talk about the zeitgeist. It's a very cynical, very dark, disconnected album. Yes, kids are going through some rough things today with this craziness in our country. But only a few of them are getting sent off to war, and they're the ones who signed up, so they're better prepared. Imagine every young man being eligible and many of them being sent to Vietnam to be killed or maimed, to be sent home with PTSD. Think about the craziness in America and the world at that time. We just put this into perspective. If you've got a relative that's about 70 years old, 70 to 80-ish right now, very good chance they were in Vietnam or close enough. You know, they have a brother who was. Everybody my age, or many people my age, have a parent, who a dad who was in Vietnam. And let me tell you something. You talk about a conflict. Wow. I can't remember the year we hit it. I've told this before, but I think we've now lost twice as many Vietnam veterans of those who went to Vietnam. I might have to check to make sure this is right, but I believe it is. I'll ask the folks at Camp Hope, PTSD Foundation of America, because it's where I got the data. The suicide numbers are out there. I believe we've lost twice as many men who came home, or twice as many men to suicide as we lost in Vietnam itself. Well, you produced the show. Is that their show? Yeah, is that right? Think about that. Think about what that did to them. PTSD is not a modern phenomenon. And by the way, if you know somebody that needs help, let me give you the number. It's free. It's free to you. That's why we raised the money for Camp Hope. It's free to you to get help. 877-717-PTSD. If you have somebody in your life that has PTSD, we're losing over 20 veterans a day to PTSD. If you know someone who has PTSD or who you suspect is having trouble coping right now, 877-717-PTSD. Now, if you're not a veteran, you know somebody who's a police officer, a teenager, a postpartum depression mom, I believe that's real. I really do. Not every mom goes through it, but I think plenty of them do. We're seeing suicide rates spiking right now. And I think part of that is the atmosphere the Democrats created over the last couple of years. This lockdown mentality is very unhealthy. People need sunlight. They need socialization. They need to be outdoors. It's unhealthy. And teenagers especially, it's very unhealthy for them to stay in their room, to stare at that screen, to get nothing but negative news all day, every day, and especially when that negative news is that everything that you used to love and respect and cherish and honor is evil. This is very unhealthy. And that's why we're seeing teenage drug abuse skyrocket, teenage overdose skyrocket, teenage suicide skyrocket, and it's starting even earlier. Get them the help they need. There are plenty of places they can go. Back to Dark Side of the Moon and the vibe in 1973. Dark Side of the Moon would stay at the top for only 1 week. It would stay in the number one spot for only 1 week. Lots of albums that stayed at the number one spot for more than 1 week. But no album ever came close for staying at the top or staying on the tally, making the list at 880. Now, those were non-consecutive. There were some weeks they didn't. That's 17 years. For 17 years, it stayed in the list of greatest albums. Do you realize there were popular bands that would release an album that wouldn't make it on the list 10 years after Pink Floyd had released Dark Side of the Moon, and it was still on the chart? That's just mind-blowing. Where was it recorded, Ramon? That is correct. Abbey Road Studios. Wow. You are a font of useless information. All right, well then, while I got you here, you got a minute? It was on this day in 1881. Alan Parsons, that's right. Alan Parsons Project engineered the album. That's exactly right. Yeah, you know what? If you'd asked me that, I wouldn't have remembered it. I wouldn't have answered it. But now that you tell me that, I do remember because you've told me that before, and that's where I first learned it before. It was on this day, Ramon, in 1881, now you're on my turf, that Billy the Kid escapes from what county jail in what state? Lincoln County is correct. And in what state? New Mexico is correct. Mesilla, or was it Mesilla? Mesilla or Mesilla? I don't know. It's Mesilla or Mesilla. I can't remember. But anyway, we've done a segment on Pink Floyd. And I, you know what? My apologies for that. But since we've already shot this segment, I'm going to take one moment to play you another song that was that was released in 1973, and it's one of the best songs ever. It was on this day in 1988 that the singer who made it famous originally, B.W. Stevenson, died at only 38 years old. Take us to break on that one, Ramon. We'll get back and get serious. Is real. A new study shows a massive disconnect between journalists and the public. Now, I know that's nothing new to you, but it is worth noting because I was at a dinner party last night, and the starting point for every conversation is stories that are in the news. Now, the good thing is there's more competition to provide news than there ever was. And that means a couple of different things. It means you can choose your news. You want liberal news, you want conservative news. It's hard to get down the middle of the road, you know, objective news any longer that doesn't have any spin, because what used to be considered that is all left-wing now. So now everything that is not left-wing is a reaction to that. But it means that at least you can flip channels and see how a story is being portrayed by various networks, and maybe from that come to your conclusion. What I find interesting, however, is that as the news business is dying, and they are dying, especially particularly on the left, as that is happening, they don't seem willing or able to self-correct, because they have no sense of self-awareness. They don't realize they're the problem. They hate you, and they just keep getting madder at you, but there's not enough of them to support them. They've tried liberal talk radio again and again and again, and they just can't get it. They cannot get it. There are so many conservative talkers in this country. There are people that are lifelong liberals who wanted to be talkers and switched over to being a conservative. Some of them are national now. Some of them, and I'm not faulting them. Look, as long as they're saying what I think is the right thing, I really don't care where they came from. But there are people, there is so much conservative content out there. There's kind of right-wing neocon conservative, a lot of that. There's conservatarian, there's more libertarian than conservatarian. But that's where the American public is now. So a new in-depth study by the supposedly nonpartisan but very left-leaning Pew Research Center found that 65% of the nearly 12,000 journalists surveyed say the media do a solid job of, quote, covering the most important stories of the day and reporting news accurately. 65% of the 12,000 journalists believe, yeah, they're doing a great job. But a solid majority of the American public at large has the opposite view. Only 35% of them feel that way. That's a 30-point perception gap. That means these people have no clue how they are perceived. When asked if journalists perform well when, quote, serving as a watchdog over elected leaders, 52% of journalists agreed. But the number dropped precipitously when the general public was asked, with fewer than 30% agreeing with the assessment. When asked if journalists manage and correct misinformation consistently, 43% of those in the industry said yes. So, look, more than half of them agree, and we don't do it very well, while just 25% of the general public agreed. Almost half, 46%, of journalists said they felt connected to their readers and viewers, while just one quarter of the public says they feel connected to the media outlets from which they get their news. And imagine that. Imagine that. There was once a day of Walter Cronkite, Edward R. Murrow. We respected and admired these people. Bob Schiffer, longtime journalist, did a piece several years ago on how insulated journalists have become. Here's an example. In the 2020 election, just 9% of Manhattan voters voted for Donald Trump. In D.C., he got just 5.4%. Think about that. So these people, that's where they live. They live in New York and D.C. They're surrounded by other people who view the world exactly. And so you get a confirmation bias. You know, how do the people in Charlie Manson's cult think what they're doing is okay because everybody around them says it is? If everybody around you lives in a polygamous cult, you think that's normal. That's why they don't let you see the outside world. That's why in Iran and China, they shut off the outside world, the internet and television, and Because as long as you don't know what else is going on out there, you think the whole world is living the way you are. Let me just give you a couple of examples of how out of touch the media is. And look, we could play this game all day. I get it. Let's start with Don Lemon, the most opinionated host on CNN.
I don't do opinion. And I know that the difference for me is I do point of view. So I'm giving my point of view as an American, okay, as a black man who happens to be gay. But I'm through that lens. But I also represent CNN. And so I must tell the truth. And if I don't, if my facts are wrong, then I have to clarify it and I have to come on television and I have to apologize and I say I got that wrong.
How about we do a little montage of this unbiased, because they think they are, this unbiased news. This is a montage of CNN and MSNBC.
You're hearing a lot of Republicans who are outraged over President Biden's handling of the exit, especially in the so-called Freedom Caucus. Yet they support the former guy, the one who set all of this in motion in the first place. The hypocrisy is off the charts, and it is sickening.
All right, everybody, good evening. We begin the readout tonight with two cases, which will once again tell us where we are as a country. Whether armed, primarily white men can continue to take matters into their own hands and serve as judge, jury, and executioner.
So I had this segment laid out where I was going to call out all of the people who are prolonging this pandemic with phony COVID cures and anti-vaccine garbage.
Now, in a moment, you're going to see the sheer spectacle of a sitting Republican U.S. senator, one of the most powerful individuals in the country, representing one of the biggest states in the nation, pretty much groveling at the feet of a right-wing cable TV entertainer, which certainly reflects the state of the union.
Was the peaceful transfer of power in January something of a miracle?
We're moving toward a kind of politics where, remember, the new Republican strategy is to follow voters to their cars. They now have normalized the idea of using political violence to get the ends they want.
That about 20 million people across America watched Thursday's primetime hearing. 20 million viewers is in the ballpark with big television events like Sunday Night Football.
Oh, my God.
But I want you to compare those 20 million viewers with the biggest ratings Donald Trump garnered for his reality show.
Oh,
the
right.
2014 show of Celebrity
the
Apprentice.
Finale. This was the buildup.
This, they had 7.6 million viewers.
That's what's become of independent, impartial, non-biased, unbiased, objective journalism.
The Michael Berry Show.
Sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the roof.
Jeannie, you're on the Michael Berry Show. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, you're up, dear.
Yes, I was just wanting to make a comment on the putting less food in things. It's not really new. My book club read the book Battling Brothers of Battle Creek, Michigan, the cereal makers, and years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was 1900s, the early 1900s. They were marketing people back then.
Right.
They ended up coming up with the idea of putting less cereal in boxes and putting toys instead, because the cereal cost more for them to put in and the toys were cheaper. Plus, it had the children begging their mothers to get the cereal with the toys. So,
Jeannie, I don't remember. I listened to that book on tape as I was driving. And I listened to a podcast about it. So I don't remember if it was in the podcast or in the book. But the two guys that were, it's hard to imagine today, the two guys that were battling it out over, you know, preeminent cereal, it was like Post was one of them. And what's the other cereal company? General Mills. Whatever, the two companies were battling it out. And one of them was running a sort of spa resort.
Right.
And you would go there.
It
and
Charles Kellogg, the older brother.
Yes,
who
yes.
Was, yes. And the younger one did the cereal, and also Graham and Post Great Nut Flakes, Graham's. graham crackers and stuff like that. But they battled their whole lives, the poor brothers. It was kind of a very interesting book. We didn't want to read it at first, and then quite a lot of history with quite a lot of big-name people back then who started America, really.
Right. And if you think about how we take cereal for granted now, it's just some product that you get off the shelf and, you know, people eat it for breakfast. When it came out, that was a big deal. And it was one of, if not the, it was one of the first consumer products with a national audience, because you could store it, had a long shelf life, which was a big deal. It was dehydrated, so you could send it across the country. You think about our lives today, and we go to the marketplace and we have fresh, well, not fresh, but we have produce from all over the world, and we have meats and fishes and pork and beef, and then we have all these dried goods and canned goods and breads from, you know, anywhere in civilization. And to think it wasn't so long ago.
Right.
How old are you, Jeannie?
I'm 81.
Okay, so when you were born, your parents had maybe 3% the options that you do today. And that's in just your lifetime.
Right. Right. Well, they ended up, they cut the cereal and they practiced so many ways to make the flakes that we don't know the history behind it. And also it made the mothers not have to cook a long time at the stove. They could pour a bowl of cereal.
Right.
And then the toys, and then they also had on the back of boxes where you could follow a trail or something, little games. And boy, did that hit the kids.
Jeannie, I don't know what your mother's situation was, but let's take just your lifetime. You're one person in your lifetime. And if we go back to, what would that be, 41?
You were born
1940, yes. Same as my dad. Okay, so in your lifetime alone, you know, we talk about the good old days, but what we tend to forget is your mother would have had to, she probably didn't have an internal water source, or if she did, she was, there's a good chance she didn't. I guess by 40 you would have. But you think about the time, how life was different for a housewife back then. She had to cook every meal. She had to clean every meal. There was no every plate. There was no a dishwasher was the mom. All the things she had to do that today is so much easier for a woman running their household, from the birth process to, you know, a snoo or a rocker or a baby bed or whatever, to all the things, you know, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Also, we had ice blocks delivered ice boxes.
Sure. No, that's why it was an ice box. I mean, to think that's all in your lifetime. Where'd you grow up, Jeannie?
Well, I'm from Pittsburgh, but I grew up in Houston, went to Reagan, and worked for some oil companies and the Chronicle and things like places like that. But both basically grew up in the Woodland Heights.
Oh, okay. What street?
Highland.
Okay. And where do you live now?
Shepherd Forest.
Oh, just a little west of there.
Right. 57 years here.
I was in Shepherd Forest this weekend. My niece and her husband are looking for a house, and we went looking between about 31st and 43rd at about Alba, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do.
That's a nice neighborhood. It's a very mature neighborhood. It's all owner occupied. People take pride in their homes. They're all about the same era. They haven't leveled any and built up the new ones. I like that neighborhood.
A couple. Oak Forest has a lot, but there's just a couple here.
Yeah. You've lived in the same house for 57 years?
Yes.
Oh, that's fantastic. Are you married?
Yes. I have just two daughters and three grandchildren, and they're growing too fast. A&M, OU, and Woodlands.
Oh, my goodness. And what does your husband do?
Well, He was an farmer's insurance agent, mm-hmm. and he's working at, he had an agency.
And what's he doing? You said he's working at what you're
Well, he'll go help out sometime as, you know, customer service.
At the farmer's insurance agency?
Uh-huh.
That he sold?
No, a man that he trained.
And he just goes up there and helps them?
Yeah.
That's adorable. Just have something to do.
It gets your cobwebs out of your head. And I even worked for HCAD after I retired a couple places. And that was interesting.
Processing the disputes over valuation?
Yeah, the formal board.
Did you enjoy that?
I did it 3 years, and some people were prepared with their estimates to get their taxes lower, but some called us communists.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Your book club, do y'all have a name for your book club?
Yeah, Oasis Book Club. It started at Macy's, mm-hmm. Or Foley's, and we're still going.
But that, what a great story.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a good life, especially, but our neighborhood now, I'm one of the eldest.
Well, that's okay. You just have to share your wisdom with the younger ones, the whippersnappers. Allied Outdoor Solutions has been a show sponsor of ours in our Houston flagship market for almost 20 years now. And it's been fun because they've gone from just a handful of folks to growing and growing and growing, doing beautiful backyard solutions to make your backyard, your front yard, your side yard, your front driveway look like a resort. And over the years, they've added Austin, San Antonio, Dallas. And what the work they do, you can see it for yourself at AlliedOutdoorSolutions.com or have them come do it for you. 844-846-1010. 844-846-1010. My big health focus has been drink more water, get basic exercise, reduce your stress, and perhaps most important, better sleep and more sleep. You don't want to lay in bed where you can't sleep. I use TheTrustedLab.com. TheTrustedLab.com. Comes directly to your home. I don't want to be involved with addictive drugs and medicine and all that. Completely healthy, completely natural, and I get results. TheTrustedLab.com. I have a buddy named Ray Breyers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it, rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com. 409-788-PIPE. 409-788-PIPE.
It's that time.
Time.
Lock and load. Show is on the air.
It's a brave new world we live in, and it seems like every day we hear that men want to be girls and girls want to be boys, that some people want to be a bee or a dog. The world feels upside down, twisted, odd. The more technology it feels, the less we're individuals, our privacy sucked away. What used to be weird is now normal. What used to be normal is now illegal. But there are some changes, social changes in our society that I embrace. There has been a rise in the last few years, and technology has enabled this, I think, to a large extent, of individuals who don't need the endorsement of a radio company, a television company, a film production company, a book deal, or anything else. Just individuals. And I think YouTube opened up a lot of this, who may have a musical talent or an individual perspective. The blog allowed us to follow people that we otherwise wouldn't have known. The podcast has opened the world. If you have something interesting to say, and you take a moment to speak it into a microphone, you might just develop an audience. Well, our guest, Zuby, as he's known to the world, is a multi-talented individual who has, across multiple platforms, in fact, across multiple countries, developed an incredible level of influence and an amazing following. He happens to be in Austin today, but I follow him on Twitter. He might be in Turkey tomorrow, Australia the next day, back in England, and then in Saudi Arabia. His worldwide travels, I must admit, are a whole lot of fun to follow. And you can find him on Twitter. You can find him most anywhere. He's being interviewed at any moment by any number of people. On Twitter, he's at Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, Music. Zuby, welcome to the show. I know we've been trying for a long time. I see you interviewed everywhere else. I was kind of starting to get my feelings hurt. I'm glad to have you on the show, buddy.
Thanks, Michael, and I appreciate that intro. That was a great intro.
Let's talk about your unique journey. I mean, I think we arrive at a point with a guy that has a musical background, a performance background, a guy that's writing some pretty deep stuff on politics and culture, and more than that, that we'll get into in a moment, but that includes fitness and wellness and a lot of things like that. You've been successful across a lot of platforms, but for you to arrive here, and it's an interesting journey. You happen to be black. You happen to be, I believe, from a Nigerian background. You've lived in multiple countries. You've done a lot of interesting things. And I think that most of us look back and go, wow, what an interesting package. I like old cars, but I feel like I've walked up on a 65 Mustang that has a Corvette front end and jacked up mud tires on the back. And I go, okay, I got to know what's going on with this thing. So what is going on with you, Zuby? How did you arrive at this point? It's not typical, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to hear that because everyone's life is just their life. So for me, my life is, you know, it's the only one I've ever experienced. So while I understand it's not typical, it's just kind of normal for me. But in terms of my background, you covered some of it already. I was born in the UK. My parents are both originally from Nigeria, and that's where my family, that's where my ancestry traces back to. When I was a baby, my parents moved to Saudi Arabia and ended up living and working there for about 2 decades. And when I was in Saudi, I actually went to an international school from kindergarten up until 5th grade. So I was actually in the American school system up until the age of 11. Then at 11, I went to boarding school back in the UK. So I was still living in the, I was still living in Saudi Arabia, but I was going to school in the UK. I did really well in school, got into Oxford University and studied computer science there. That's also where I first started making my music and released my first album, Commercial Underground. And I graduated when I was 20 years old. I did my music full-time for 1 year, spent 3 years working in the corporate world while doing my music stuff on the side. And then in 2011, I took the big leap and became a full-time, self-employed, independent musician. And since 2011, I've been spending the past 11 years just grinding, really, very, very literally. In the UK, I used to travel around all over from city to city, across the country, doing gigs and selling my CDs, first of all on the street for several years, and then eventually in shopping malls where I'd sell my music and my merchandise as well. And then in 2019, I started my podcast, Real Talk with Zuby. I wrote and released my first book called Strong Advice, Zuby's Guide to Fitness for Everybody. And I started developing a much bigger following across the world, especially in the USA. I had a couple tweets go viral, which led to some really big figures acknowledging me, like Joe Rogan and Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, all types of people. Onto their radar, especially, yeah, Glenn Beck. In 2019, that was really a major shift for me, which is interesting because from 2006, when I released my first album, up until 2019, I was really only known just for my music and within small pockets of the UK. So my audience was a much smaller, more limited demographic. But now my audience spans the entire globe, and some people still primarily follow and know me for my music. Other people, it's my social and political and cultural commentary. Other people, it's my work and fitness. And other people follow me for even more reasons. So I'm a, you know, I'm a man of many, I wear a lot of different hats. I have a lot of different jobs and career paths, but ultimately the common thread is wanting to help motivate and inspire people. I've always wanted to use my voice for good and as a positive influence. It's why I wanted to become a rapper in the first place. And so I still do that. I just do it across a bigger range of mediums now.
Let's talk about that moment when a young man with Nigerian parents, and I think I probably have an idea what your parents were like. A friend of mine named Indy Kalu played professional football for 15 years. One of the few guys who left with more money than he went in because he's a very smart investor. Very, very bright guy. He got a scholarship to the University of Texas football program, one of the best in the country. And his parents said, no, you're going to Rice because we don't want you to play football. And if you do play football, we want you to get a better education and a better school. But that never happens. I know how tough they were on him, how conservative they were. My wife's from India. I understand the tiger mom, the tough parents. So they go to Saudi Arabia. They're obviously very successful, hardworking people. And they send you to this great school to give you these great opportunities. Then you go to Oxford. You're studying computer science. You're on the track, Zuby. And then you say, I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to bet that wasn't popular.
You'd be surprised. You'd be wrong.
Really?
No. My family supported me from the very beginning. There's a high probability that either my mom or my dad is wearing a Zuby t-shirt or hoodie right as we speak. They wear my merchandise about as much as I do, if not more.
Well, they're proud of you now.
Every single album I've released, my mom has been the first person to buy it. Anything I put out, my mom always wants to be the first person to buy and support. So actually, even from the very beginning, before I started doing music full time, because I was doing it for several years as a hobby before I went to full time, they've always supported. They've been to at least a dozen of my shows. They help me with merchandise. I mean, I'm in the USA right now. If I get certain merch orders that need to ship from the UK, my mom will go to the post office and do that for me. So, I have to give them a huge props in this regard, because as you probably acknowledge, this is actually a little bit of an anomaly for what Nigerian or African parents in general are known for in terms of what they want their children to do. So they were really open to it. And I think also the fact that, it's not like I dropped out of university to become a rapper or anything like that. I got my degree. I did really well in school. I did well in university. And so, I did my education. I finished all my education. And then it was like, this is the path. This is the path I want to do. This is where God is leading me. And this is what I think my purpose in this world is. And also, I'm good at it. And you can see I'm already making money from it. So they were like, yeah, if that's what our son wants to do, we're not going to try to force him to be a doctor or force him to be a computer engineer or anything. If this is what he wants to do and his heart is set on it and he's making major strides in this way, the best thing we can do as parents is to get behind it and support it. And that's what they've done for the past 15 years.
Guest, Z-U-B-Y. He raps. He speaks at conservative and libertarian conferences, youth conferences. He's just written a children's book. Born in Nigeria, grew up in Saudi Arabia and England. A fascinating life, and we're exploring it. For our audience that doesn't know your music side of your background, he's not one of these guys that's talking about bitches and hoes and drive-by shootings and how much money he can throw around in the streets and how somebody's going to end up dead from his gat. It's very positive. It's very uplifting. It's very motivational. And I think you've probably made a difference there because you've reached people in a way that maybe I or Donald Trump or Jordan Peterson couldn't, or Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. And you've reached into the sinews of society. And, I think that matters. I think that's something worth noting. You also made fitness and wellness a big part of your brand by making it a big part of your life and sharing your journey and your experience. How did that come about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been going to the gym for about 20 years now. I started working out when I was in my mid-teens, when I was like 14, 15, I first started going to the gym. And here's a funny thing. I weighed more 20 years ago than I weigh now. So actually, when I was in my mid-teens, I got pretty heavy. Certainly not obese by today's standards, but you know, I was not in the best of shape. And when I was in boarding school, I actually used to play rugby. I started playing rugby when I got to the UK around the age of 11, and I played all the way through to university. So my first motivation to go to the gym and get in shape was really to make myself the better rugby player, to get fitter, to get stronger, to build up my muscles. It's a very physical contact sport, so that's what got me into it. And then it's just something that became an integrated part of my life. It just became a keystone habit, something that I would do most days and have done most days in terms of training for the past two decades. And it's something that I think has been really changed my life in a positive way, in some ways directly and in many ways indirectly. Because one of the things I love most about working out, and especially strength training, is that the way you become successful in that, the way that you get stronger, you get fitter, you build your muscles and so on through the dietary and training habits, if you can apply that same mindset to other things in life, then it's actually the same way you become successful in everything. So if someone can develop their body or build a strong or impressive physique, it actually says a lot about them, because you can take that same discipline, hard work, consistency, perseverance, overcoming plateaus, overcoming criticism, all of that stuff, as well as the overlying point of just absolute personal responsibility, because no one can work out for you, no one can eat food for you, and so on. It's all 100% on you. And I think we live in this age, especially now more than ever, where there's this real denial of personal responsibility and denial of accountability. And if you can apply it in one area, I believe you can apply it in many, many other areas. So for me, health and fitness isn't just about health and fitness and also, or, you know, being strong or aesthetics. Like those are all important, and those are all good things. But for me, the mindset shift and the ability to create a positive habit, which then bleeds into everything else, for me, that is really powerful. And I think it's one of the aspects of it that is often overlooked when people are talking about the importance of proper training and nutrition. I think people focus on the stuff that's a bit more obvious or sometimes even superficial, just what's visual. But they're not really thinking about it on a deeper level, both in terms of the body, but also in terms of the mind.
I want to get to your children's book in a moment, but why what you have to say matters to a big portion of our audience has a lot to do with you being sort of, for those who don't know Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, sort of in the vein of a Jordan Peterson type person, someone who is sharing a perspective that I think is resonating on a deep level. I pulled a couple of tweets of his from this week, and I'll just share them so you get a sense of what I'm talking about. Here's one. Old school lefties, that's in quotes, are barely represented anymore in Anglosphere countries. They either find themselves having to adopt the progressive woke claptrap in order to stay aligned with their side, or they end up aligning with more conservative people and being labeled as such. Here's another. In short, if you support having lots of taxpayer-funded social programs, welfare, state subsidies, workers' unions, etc., but don't think women can have penises or that white people are inherently privileged, then good luck to you. Congratulations on becoming right-wing. Or another. I think this largely sums up why so many former liberal lefties eventually find themselves aligning with people in the center and center-right as their side accelerates recklessly into an abyss of performative activism, imaginary fights, and outright nonsense. What informed your worldview, and how did that develop as you grew into an adult?
A great question. Well, I think my exposure and experiences from a very age being surrounded by such a broad range of people and cultures. So, again, I was born in England, grew up in Saudi Arabia, went to an American school, essentially up until fifth grade, was surrounded by a lot of Americans and Canadians, and then have a family background from Nigeria, and was going back to Nigeria every 2 or 3 years during my childhood. So just from those, beyond all the other travel I've done, I've been to about 40 countries now and spent a lot of time in different ones, it gives you a really wide perspective on the world and on humanity. And I'm someone who's from a very young age, I've always been really curious, and I've always been interested in how things work. And there's nothing I find more fascinating than human beings individually, and also on a societal or a national level, right? All the differences that exist between countries, or even between cities, or between individuals, or between groups. You know, why is that the case? I grew up in Saudi Arabia. Okay, how come here this is the religion that most people are Muslim, and this is what they believe, and this is how they practice, and this is how it affects the laws and the culture and the traditions and the ways of doing things? And then I go back to Nigeria, and I see the way that things are in Nigeria. My family is Igbo, but there's many, many hundreds of different tribes in Nigeria, and everyone has different ways of doing things. And then you look at the USA, and you look at the UK, and you look at Europe, all these different places you go to, they all have their differences. I mean, just being in the USA right now, I mean, I'm from England, and the UK and the US are quite different in some pretty significant ways.
Yes.
I think that because, you know, you speak English in both countries, people think, oh, you know, the UK is like a small version of the US, or the US is a big version of the UK. And whilst there are similarities, there's some also real big differences. And it's interesting to think, okay, why is that? What's the common history, and what's the point where those histories change? I mean, this country is less than, I think Americans often forget that the USA is a teenager as far as countries go. I mean, it's not even 250 years old. There's chairs and buildings in the, I mean, my college at university is 700 years older than the
at
USA.
Oxford, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't know this.
No, founded in 1100.
With his finger on the pulse, the King of Ding continues on The Michael Berry Show.
Z-U-B-Y. He raps. He speaks at conservative and libertarian conferences, youth conferences. He's just written a children's book. Born in Nigeria, grew up in Saudi Arabia and England. A fascinating life, and we're exploring it. Have you been surprised at this incredible response you have received in the United States, particularly with a very young, politically young or audience that has really resonated to your message? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised. I get surprised every day. I mean, every time someone recognizes me out and about, or in an airport, or even on a plane or something, I'm always like, wow, like, that's crazy. I'm not even from this country. So yeah, it's on one hand, it's something that I had a vision for, and something that I expected would happen in the future. But it's still pretty mind-blowing to experience it. And it's also interesting because it's that young demographic, as you said, but it also extends up to people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s. I've been recognized and have people following me really across such a wide demographic. And I think the main reason why that is happening is because I think, number one, of course, I've got a positive message to put out there and a unique perspective. But I think also people are looking for people who are willing to seek and speak the truth. I think that, you know, during the intro, you said that it seems like the world is getting weird and things are getting unmoored from reality. And I think that as that happens, as people feel isolated, you know, coming off the back of the past 2.5 years and all the craziness before that, people are looking for people who are making sense, and people who are trying to make sense of things, and people who are honest and not trying to lie or manipulate people or push them very partisan agenda. I think that's why people like Joe Rogan. That's why people like Jordan Peterson. That's why people like myself and many others, because we don't have all the answers, but we're trying to make sense of what's going on in the world. And we all take pride in being honest and being authentic and not trying to mislead people or misrepresent who we are. And I think that with many aspects of the corporate media and the political establishment and then the pharmaceutical establishment and all of these different things, people have lost faith in them and lost trust in them for good reason. And so I think now in this age of the internet, now that things are more, I guess you could say, democratic in terms of what people want to consume and are able to consume across all these different mediums, I think if you're someone who has a valuable message and you have a level of courage and you're truthful and you're authentic, then whether or not people totally agree with you or align with you on everything, they will respect you and they will find what you're doing interesting and compelling. So I think all those above reasons are why what I'm doing is able to resonate with such a broad range of people. And I think in the USA in particular, I think some of these, you know, what people refer to as the culture war or some of this craziness, I think it's sort of stronger here than it is in most other places, and people are feeling it more. So well, I think even
I,
more.
I
so
would also like to add to that. I think a big part of your appeal is that many conservatives, and I consider myself more of a conservative libertarian, but many conservatives in this country, many people who are talking about things that are true, that resonate or that ring true, they came to it from a position of a sort of Pollyanna, aspirational approach, but somewhere along the way they got knocked down and mugged one too many times, and they got up mad and fought back. And sometimes there is lack of a vision, and there's more of just an anger at the base of, I want to change things back, I want to fix things, I want to oppose things. Whereas what you tend to promote is a very endorphin-inducing post-workout positive approach. Hey, there's silliness all around us, but let's fix it with a smile. And I find that very refreshing. I find too little of that, frankly. And I think young people particularly, they're not yet as burdened with the woes of the world, but they can still be won over in an aspirational level. I think that's why a lot of young people are libertarians. They can still be won over with a very positive message that doesn't have to feel like a crime victim.
Yes, I think it's important, and I've made this point before on Twitter and on podcasts, in that I think it's important to promote and support what you promote, what the people and things that align with your values and principles and all of that, rather than only fighting against and defining yourself by what you're against. I think it's better to define yourself by what you are for and what you are in favor of, rather than simply what you oppose. So I don't consider myself to be, you know, I'm anti this and I'm anti this and I'm anti that, because yeah, that tells people what I don't like and what I'm opposed to, but it's a negative framing. I'd rather tell people, look, this is what I'm for, this is what I'm in favor of, this is what I promote. And then I try to, through my music, through my podcast, through my writing, everything I do, all my creative output, it's putting that out there. It's like saying, hey, look, you know, if you want some positive rap music, I make positive rap music. I could spend all my time criticizing the fact that people make negative or violent or misogynistic music, but it's like, hey, I can't and I don't want to control everybody else, but let me put out and let me represent what I want to put out and what I want to represent, instead of just going after people who are pushing fat acceptance or body positivity all the time and going after people for not taking care of themselves. It's like, let me put this forward, right? Let me write a book. Let me write multiple books encouraging people, teaching people what they need to know so that they can eat better, train better, live better, get stronger, lose weight, whatever your goal is, let me do that. So I think that, yeah, I think you nailed that part. That's very much what I'm about. And yes, sometimes, you know, you have to take a stand against things that you're opposed to or things that you think are egregious or are crossing certain lines. But I try not to spend all my time dwelling in the negativity, because when you do, you can very much become bitter and resentful and angry over time, and that tends to come out in your work and in your speech as well.
Lock and load.
Lock and load.
Lock and load.
You've got
the Michael Berry Show.
Mic check, yo. We still here? Still going strong, yeah? Are you down with Zuby?
I will not go pop, I will not go soft. When I say no means no, this is true hip-hop, I do not flip-flop. When I say flow means flow, this is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. I will not go pop, I will not go soft. When I say no means no, this is true hip-hop, I do not flip-flop. When I say flow means flow, this is perseverance. 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 I've been on the rhyme since I made a first appearance. I've been on the grind, never waited for the clearance. Life is all the time, so I'm gonna live it fearless. Yeah, and people gonna hear this. Made a little name with a vision and coherence. Never been a lame, now I'm closer to a genius. Knowledge in my brain, chalk it up to the experience. Still I'm not rich, but at least I ain't broke. Never sell dreams, cause I'd rather sell hope. People so lost in the mirrors and the smoke. Think I'd be a real gift if I said I sold dope. Nope. But my fans will tell you that I'm awesome. Awesome. I started selling and they bought them. I told them get them and I got them. So if you want dope bars, that's not a problem. It's time to put the needles on the wax. Rock hard like I got the Beatles in the back. Go soft, make an easy living off the map. Or I can go hard like a freaking shooter on the track. I'm grinding from a zero to a stack. And I'm talking about De Niro getting jacked. If Wakanda needs a new king, I'ma go hard to be the leader of the pack. A needle in a stack, and I'm fiending to attack. Not a baller, no T'Challa, but a hero and I'm black. I'm an eagle to a rat, rebel demon on a track. I'm a scholar and a brawler, you don't feel it if you're whack. You're always talking evil in your rap. And I'm trying to put my meanings on the map. I gave you 12 rules for life and kept my room clean. I'm the Jordan Peterson of rap. I will not go pop, I will not go soft. When I say no means no, this is true hip-hop, I do not flip-flop. When I say flow means flow, this is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. I will not go pop, I will not go soft. When I say no means no, this is true hip-hop, I do not flip-flop. When I say flow means flow, this is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. This is perseverance. And I believe what I prophesize, so I don't apologize. Unless I do wrong, I don't bow to the mob. I don't live to antagonize. But they say I'm too outspoken. They wonder if I'm joking. Look, a little bit is chess, but I say what I feel, man. I'm real and I'm open. Trust in God, but I live in the physical. Selfish thoughts, but I give in the lyrical. Thought cops hot, want my speech to be criminal. Lies get fought when I speak the political. Why? I am not left wing, I am not right wing. I just know all these things I know. Yeah, you cannot label me, you can't put shame on me. When I say go means go. Fresh, I step into the premises. Kick dope rhymes and they love how I'm expressing it. Hop online and reply to all the messages. Gotta spend time, man, I'm grateful that you cherish it. Don't talk crap, no, I'd rather be irrelevant. Can't play dumb.
Zuby is our guest, Z-U-B-Y. He raps, he speaks at conservative and libertarian conferences, youth conferences. He's just written a children's book. Born in Nigeria, grew up in Saudi Arabia and England. A fascinating life, and we're exploring it. Let's talk about your new project, because if you talk about aspirational, you talk about how you affect children. And we've lost the battle for the hearts and minds of children by not creating good content, value-based for them. Rush Limbaugh actually got into that project, and he didn't have kids. Let's talk about your new children's book, The Candy Calamity, which is, well, let's talk about why you wrote it and what's in it. Why would somebody want to read it?
Yeah, sure thing. So The Candy Calamity is a book for children about the importance of health and taking care of your body. It also talks about self-control and moderation. So as I said, back in 2019, I put out a book for grown-ups, which was called Strong Advice, and that covers, you know, mindset, motivation, nutrition, and training. That goes more into the nitty-gritty of what people need to know if they want to, you know, build their muscle, improve their physique, lose body fat, and so on. But I wanted to create something aimed at a younger demographic which is a lot of fun. It's a really fun book. The entire thing rhymes. As a rapper, I wanted to make sure my book rhymes. But it's also got an important message in there, which is that you only have one body, and you should take care of it. You shouldn't spend all your time just eating candy and not exercising. It's important to do that, and it shows why it's important through the story.
And the message to take away is our body is a temple. What you put into it matters. If we could teach that to children at a young age, well, I see these cases, and I have doctors who tell me about they're seeing not just obesity, but downright, outright, full-blown diabetes before children are graduating from 12th standard. I mean, this is scary, scary stuff. I love the idea of making eating well fun. It doesn't have to be boring. It doesn't have to be tasteless or bland. We should have an understanding. It's part of our, we do teach our children, we teach our young girls, don't spread your legs for every boy. That's a special thing. It should be based on love. We should teach our children that your body, as you said, you only get one of them. It's a temple. It's special. You're going to, if you live a long life, it's the only one you're going to have. You brush your teeth for a reason, right? You wash your face for a reason. Why wouldn't what you consume be part of that as well? All right. Then the book is The Candy Calamity. It's out now. My last question for you, give us a little health tip on the basics. I ask my doctors all the time when I have them on as guests, give us a tip or two that every person can follow. They don't have to be Mr. Universe. I'm having dinner, by the way, Zuby, tonight with former Mr. Universe Lee Labrada. Thought you'd like to know that.
Amazing. Awesome.
Give us you don't have to be a Mr. Universe. You don't have to be in Zuby's shape. What are a couple simple things you suggest people can do that would improve their health, their fitness, their wellness? Easy, simple, accessible things.
Easy, simple, accessible. Okay. Everybody should strive to walk at least 10,000 steps a day. And depending on where you live, that could be very easy and something you do without even noticing. Or it could be something that you find is actually quite hard to do. If you live somewhere that's got very hot or very cold, or a lot of the cities in the USA are not really designed for walking around. So you may find that it takes more effort, but 10,000 steps a day, I think, is a very good and quite easily achievable target. Also, if you don't already do any form of resistance training, then everyone should do some resistance training. Cardio is not a substitute for resistance training. And when I say that, I mean strength training. I mean body weight training. I mean lifting weights. Everyone should do some of it, whether you're a man or a woman. Young, old, it's not just for young men or for young women, everybody. In fact, if you're the older you get, the more important it is, because it protects, it's not just about getting jacked, it protects against osteoporosis, it reduces the risk of certain types of cancer and diabetes, it increases your metabolism by preserving your lean body mass. There are many, many benefits of strength training that you actually don't get from cardiovascular training as well, alone. So if you're not already lifting, you certainly should be. So let's go for those two. I don't want to overload it, but 10,000 steps a day, and you should certainly be doing some form of resistance training a few times a week.
And I would add to that, which I try to do every day, drink more water and get more sleep. Zuby, you are living your best life. It's fun to watch. I'm a big fan. I've enjoyed our off-air conversations. I've really enjoyed sharing some of your life perspective and your story with our audience. Maybe the next Zuby is out there and didn't realize it. They're studying computer science at Oxford. Come back anytime, buddy, and keep being you. You're great.
Thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate it.
If you like The Michael Berry Show and podcast, please tell one friend. And if you're so inclined, write a nice review of our podcast. Comments, suggestions, questions, and interest in being a corporate sponsor and partner can be communicated directly to the show at our email address, michael@michaelberryshow.com, or simply by clicking on our website, michaelberryshow.com. The Michael Berry Show and podcast is produced by Ramon Robles, the King of Ding. Executive producer is Chad Nakanishi. Brad Gloria is the Baron of Booking for guests and provides voices. Jim Mudd is the creative director. Script writer parody producer and lord of laughter, is Kenny Webster Jr., a.k.a. Producer Kenny. Voices, jingles, tomfoolery, and shenanigans are provided by Chance McLean. Director of Research is Sandy Peterson. Listener and superfan contributions are appreciated and often incorporated into our production. Where possible, we give credit. Where not, we take all the credit for ourselves. God bless the memory of Rush Limbaugh. Long live Elvis. Be a simple man, like Lynyrd Skynyrd told you, and God bless America. Finally, if you know a veteran suffering from PTSD, call Camp Hope at 877-717-PTSD, and a combat veteran will answer the phone to provide free counseling. I have a buddy named Ray Briers, and he owns a company called The Pipe Yard, Inc., INC.com. And if you have a project that needs carbon steel pipe, he stocks everything you need. New surplus, secondary, you name it. Rat hole, mouse hole, conductor casing, pipe pile, sign pole, structural, road bores, dredging. If you're buying or selling, you got an abandoned pipeline, wherever, he'll buy it. ThePipeYardInc.com, 409-788-PIPE, 409-788-PIPE. My big health focus has been drink more water, get basic exercise, reduce your stress, and perhaps most important, better sleep and more sleep. You don't want to lay in bed where you can't sleep. I use TheTrustedLab.com. TheTrustedLab.com comes directly to your home. I don't want to be involved with addictive drugs and medicine and all that. Completely healthy, completely natural, and I get results. TheTrustedLab.com.